Chapter 3. Despite the early hour, there were already people on the road. Some looked like farmers and other workers about to start their days, and the rest looked like people who had probably been out all night and were trying to get home before the sun was completely over the horizon. It wasn't just the humans who were sorting themselves out either. Nighttime denizens scurried toward their holes while the early birds began to chatter more loudly. No one really paid any attention to us as we hiked along the road, and we made it fairly far before we saw the first sign of an official presence. A pair of officers were in the process of setting up a roadblock. The complaints could already be heard, along with demands to know what they were looking for. Sorsha and I ducked into a group of stores by the side of the road and found a coffee shop that had just opened. We joined the line while we kept an eye on the officers, but as we moved forward, we saw the policemen start to let people through after they had checked either the guest registration ticket or an identification tag that the locals seemed to carry. "They're looking for guest tickets," I pointed out quietly. "They're not even bothering to look at faces."
"Maybe we should find some new identities then,"
she whispered. I scanned the other people in the coffee shop as we neared the front of the line. There were only a few women out this early, and the few who were around looked like performers from the first inn we'd passed up. There were plenty of men to choose from, but the real question was whether we could get their passes.
"Any good options?" I asked.
"I need to find the right people,"
she murmured as she studied the other customers.
"Order me a tea if they have any."
She stepped away from me and started to move slowly among the other customers. She finally stopped near an older woman in a bright orange dress with random stripes. The older woman looked as if she were about to fall asleep on her feet, and she blinked owlishly at Sorsha when the mage said something to her. I was at the front of the line, and I ordered the largest cup of coffee they sold and a cup of tea. While I waited, I glanced around again. Sorsha had moved on from the tired woman and stopped near a pair of men who sipped their coffee while they watched a group of women walk along the street.
"This is the only tea we have,"
the clerk announced as she placed two cups on the counter. The coffee smelled strong and delicious, but the tea looked weak and smelled vaguely of cut weeds. I plunked down a couple of coins and walked slowly toward Sorsha, who had found a spot under a massive oak tree. "Afraid this is the only tea they have," I said as I handed her the cup.
"Oof, I'm not sure it really qualifies as tea,"
she remarked as she took a sniff.
"But I guess it'll have to do."
"Do we have some new names?" I asked.
"We are now Donald Spencer and Emma Grace,"
she murmured as she handed me the pass. "Should we walk through together or separately? They're definitely more interested in couples."
"I say we try separate. So far, they're only looking at the passes. They don't seem to have pictures of us or a description."
"Then let's slip through before those arrive," I suggested. We finished our beverages quickly, then joined the queue at the roadblock. Unlike the sheriff's deputies at the Brook Island Bridge, the officers on the 78 kept things moving quickly. They checked each ticket, then waved the person through when they didn't find the guest passes they wanted. Sorsha made it through first and moved further along the road without looking back. She was nearly out of sight by the time I was waved through. I had to fight the urge to push through the other people and run down the road after her. I kept my pace under control, though I still managed to move quickly. I wasn't the only one. Most of the people were trying to hustle along as well as they tried to make up for the time they lost at the roadblock. I found Sorsha standing by a dog cart and talking to the driver, a man in his 30s with a large, floppy hat and a bright red sweater. I slowed as I approached, but she waved me over.
"This is Jeremy,"
she said as she introduced the man. Jeremy had dark brown skin and black hair that fell down to his shoulders. He gave me a nod and tapped the rim of his hat. I noticed then that he was missing the middle finger on his right hand.
"Jeremy was just telling me that they were setting up roadblocks further along,"
Sorsha added.
"Said they were looking for people using stolen guest passes," Jeremy explained. "But I saw a bird come in, so they may have more information."
"Do you know what this is about?" I asked.
"Well, someone was killed," Jeremy said with a shrug. "That's what I managed to get out of one of the officers."
"Seems like a lot for a murder," I mused.
"I think there's mages involved," Jeremy added. "But I don't know if that's the victim or the killer." Guess we need to be on the lookout for a black mage, I murmured, though I had no idea how you could tell if someone was a black mage. Benny and June had certainly fooled us when we'd met them on the canal, and those blood mages had been some of the most normal-seeming people we'd met.
Where's the next roadblock?
Sorsha asked. About a mile or so further on, Jeremy replied. I pulled out the book of New Jersey maps and found the section that covered the airport and surrounding areas. I studied the map for a moment, then handed it to Jeremy. Is there any way for us to get here? I said as I pointed to a road labeled Morris Avenue. It was south of the road we were currently on, but it met up with 78 further west of us. It also happened to become 124 on the other side of 78, but since we'd both agreed to avoid the mutant wasteland, there didn't seem to be any point in asking about that. Jeremy frowned as he studied the map, and I wasn't sure he even knew how to use one, but he saw something he recognized because he lit up and smiled at Sorsha.
Oh, the university, he said. My sister went there. Best place to go if you want to be a teacher.
Which university?
Sorsha asked as she tried to look at the map over Jeremy's shoulder.
This one, he said as he pointed to something on the map. It's called Keene University on this, but it's the Keene Casey University for Advanced Studies. It's really easy to find.
That's good,
Sorsha encouraged.
About a half a mile further on, you'll find the old broad rail line, Jeremy added as he pointed westward. Follow that south. The road you want is called the Old Cut. Can't miss it. There's a big grist mill right there, and they've still got a train that they sometimes use to move the grain around the site. Don't worry, though, they don't use it on the track outside the mill.
Thanks, Jeremy,
Sorsha said as she gave him a hug.
And remember, don't tell anyone you saw us.
Not a word,
Jeremy agreed. He whistled to his dog, and the small cart trundled eastward toward the next checkpoint. We watched for a moment, then started toward the west again.
How come you didn't use your magic on him? I asked.
Didn't have to. He loves the idea of keeping secrets from the mages and the police.
Still, he might let something slip.
Trust me,
she said with a grin.
He won't tell them a thing.
We found the old tracks easily enough, less than a mile further along where they crossed 78. They were rusted and pitted, and sections had even been pulled up for use elsewhere. But it was easy enough to follow what was left of their path. A few saplings had sprung up, and there were plenty of weeds, but otherwise the track was clear. The old rail line was a popular north-south traverse, it turned out. We passed quite a few people heading in both directions, though it wasn't nearly as packed as 78. We made good time, and the sun was still low in the sky when I caught the first whiff of oats and rye.
The grist mill,
Sorsha surmised as she took a deep breath. Agreed, I said. A few minutes later, we had our first view of the mill. It was massive, with one large brown brick building that had to be from the pre-magic era, and a second stone and timber building that stretched from the original parking lot all the way to a small river. The whole area smelled like a field of grain on a summer day, and the clank of the great wheels could be heard through the open doors of the unloading bays. The old cut was also hard to miss. Someone had replaced the black surface with stones, but otherwise it looked as wide and well-used as it must have been in the pre-magic days. Carts bearing grain rumbled along the road at a steady pace, and though there were plenty of pedestrians, they stuck to the edges of the road. "Shall we?" I offered as I held my hand out to Sorsha. She gave me a smile, and we joined the flow of people that moved along the old cut. It was a pleasant walk, for as long as we could follow it, but we reached a fork in the road, and it was easy to see that the old cut now followed a new path that curved away to the south. The old Morris Avenue was still there, but it was an overgrown trail of vines, weeds, and ankle-breaking holes.
Which way?
Sorsha asked as we stepped under the shade of an oak to sip some water. We know the old trail eventually rejoined 78, and we have no idea where the old cut will take us.
All this to find one man who may not even want to help us,
Sorsha groused. Evan seemed to think we should talk to him. And if this Charles Darwin has more guns, then I also think it's important.
You only want to touch his guns,
she said with a smirk.
Admit it, you boys only ever think about one thing.
I won't deny it, I admitted with a grin. Though I don't know how you managed to make that sound so dirty. Sorsha gave me a smile, and then we trudged over to the less worn path.
I saw a few people stare at us curiously, but no one called out any warnings as we started on our way. The path narrowed as we moved further west, and I could hear more critters in the brush. Nothing too big, but small animals always attracted larger animals that liked to eat them, and I tried to estimate how much time I had to wait until I could create a new gun. Sorsha seemed to be on edge as well, and we didn't bother to stop when we were hungry. We dug some of our supplies from our bags and ate as we walked. I tried creating the Colt a couple of times as well, since it was nearing the 24-hour mark since I'd fired the last bullet from it, but it refused to solidify in my hand. I could almost feel it, like it was just there for me to grab, but my palm remained empty, while the wild forest around us encroached ever closer to the trail. Finally, the trail started to widen once again, and I could see remnants of the old road. We passed a tumble-down building shaped like a box. There was still a sign over what was left of the door frames that said, White Castle. Next to that was another square building with a covered area out front. Three lines of silver and black rectangular shapes stood in front of the building, most still upright, though two had started to tilt sideways. There was a strange smell in the air, something sweet, but in an unpleasant way. I saw Sorsha's nose wrinkled and realized mine was as well.
What is that?
She asked. It sort of smells like some of that stuff at Home Depot, I replied as I tried not to sneeze. Some of that pre-magic material.
Is it poisonous?
She gulped. I think it was, only in really big doses, I tried to reassure her. We were near a sign for something called a golf course when we both stopped and looked around. We could hear something large moving around in the shadows, though neither of us could see anything beneath the trees. Is it a person? I asked quietly.
No, it's definitely an animal.
A moment later, we thought we had our answer when a deer leapt from the underbrush. It hesitated on the trail for a moment as it caught sight of us, then bounded off into the woods on the other side. Sorsha and I grinned at each other and started along the trail when we heard more snuffling from the shadows. We glanced at each other again, and then we started to jog along the old road. We didn't make it much further before the simple sound of snapping twigs turned into a riot of crashing sounds. And then something very large burst from the woods into the road. I recognized the sleek black fur and brown muzzle right away. It was a black bear, a common sight in the area, but this was one of the larger ones I had seen. It was easily 600 pounds, but probably closer to 700. It stood up slowly on its back legs when it spotted us, so we could take in its full 6-foot height.
Hex!
Sorsha stammered as she started to back away, a move that caught the bear's attention. Stay still, I muttered, as I grabbed her arm and tried to keep her from tearing back down the trail. You won't outrun it. Start shouting, and maybe we can scare it away. Bears hate noise. At least, that's what I'd always been taught. Of course, when I'd encountered bears in the past, it was always with a group of people, and we could make enough noise to startle a bear several miles away. I'd never been this close to one with only one other person, and I had no idea if the rules were the same. I thought briefly about the Colt again, then gave up when it stubbornly remained absent. With no other options, I started to yell at the bear, and Sorsha joined in a moment later, though her voice sounded more high-pitched and a little more frantic than normal. The bear dropped back to all 4 feet, but it didn't run away like I had hoped. It swung its massive head back and forth as it listened to our shouts, clearly unimpressed with our efforts, though it didn't surge forward either.
Hex!
Sorsha pleaded as the bear stepped forward and we both stepped back. Damn! I muttered as I tried to summon the Colt revolver again, but it remained elusive. It felt closer, but not quite substantial yet. I tried to remember what else we had in the bags, but all I could come up with were the fire sticks we'd picked up at the mall. Can you control it? I asked as I started to paw through the satchel for a fire stick.
Maybe,
the mage said as she bit her lip.
But wild animals are difficult under the best conditions, and I've never tried to command anything like a bear.
Just see if you can tell it to move on, or at least stay where it is until I can get the fire stick lit. Sorsha nodded. But it wasn't hard to see that she was seriously worried about the bear and her ability to control it. Her brow furrowed in concentration, and the bear actually went still for a moment. And then the bear stood up again, and Sorsha gave a little squeak. Whatever control Sorsha had been able to exercise was gone, and the bear rumbled as it dropped back down to all fours and took two steps toward us. I finally had a fire stick in my hand, and I yanked it out of the satchel. I thrust it toward Sorsha since I couldn't find one of the Zippos, and hoped she would understand. Sorsha jumped, but when she saw the fire stick in my hand, she gave me a nod. She managed to create a tiny flame just as the bear roared, and the sound nearly extinguished the flame. Sorsha gulped and looked away from the bear as she struggled to light the tip of the fire stick. And then a raucous din filled the air around us. It sounded like a band trying to tune up in the very worst way. There was the pounding of drums and clashing metal, the blast of a rusty horn, and something that made a shrill wail that made me want to cover my ears. The bear roared, then ran off into the woods and disappeared into the shadows again. We watched the bear for a moment, then exchanged pensive glances. Before either of us could say anything, a handful of people stepped out of the woods as well. They all carried some sort of instrument, which they continued to toot and bang as they stepped into the trail. Men and women alike wore a ragtag collection of clothes, most of them faded and stained. It was also hard to miss the swords, machetes, long knives, and other weapons the group carried. Scavengers, I realized, which could only mean trouble for us.
"Well, well, well," one man chortled as he looked us over. "What have we here? Take a wrong turn off the old cut, did you?"
"Thanks for your help with the bear," I replied as I tried to tug Sorsha down the trail. "We'll just mosey on now."
"That's it?"
the man demanded in an aggravated tone. It was hard to tell his age beneath the grime and scars, but the brown eyes glittered with an anger I usually associated with someone younger. "We don't have much," I offered in a placating tone. "Just a few supplies we picked up on the way."
"Supplies?" the man disparaged. "We don't need no stinking supplies. We got plenty of food and water around here."
"We have a few fire sticks," I offered, as I held up the one we had been about to light.
"You'll have to come up with more than that,"
the man demanded.
"What else you got?"
I dropped the fire stick back in the satchel and pawed through the rest of the contents. I had no interest in bartering with these scavengers, but I needed a little more time. I pictured the Colt revolver again, and for a moment I thought it would appear. Instead, my hand closed around one of June's vials.
"We have medicine," I offered as I pulled out the vial.
"How much money you got?"
one of the women demanded. Everything about her was dark and smoky, from the color of her eyes to the painted fingernail she pointed at me. "Not much," I replied as I tried not to growl in frustration. "All I needed was the Colt, and we could be past this nonsense and on our way."
"I say we just take what we want,"
one of the other men suggested.
"And I want the girl."
"Then I get the boy,"
the smoky woman added to titters of approval from the other women. Sorsha turned her gaze on the man who had spoken first, and he turned slowly toward her.
"You'll let us pass,"
she instructed.
"We'll let them go,"
the man announced.
"She's a witch,"
one of the women howled.
"Kill her before she tries to control the rest of us."
A lot happened then. The scavengers turned on us like an angry mob, while their erstwhile leader turned to face them. Weapons were drawn, and the leader struck out at the others with a sword and club. But the scavengers weren't much for loyalty, apparently, especially when magic was involved. They struck back with equal ferocity and cut down their former leader in seconds while the rest of their troop closed in on us. Just one gun. That was all I needed. So why was it so hard to get?